The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
This is episode 10 of Kotaku Split Screen, and we still don't have a music intro because Kirk Hamilton is very lazy.
Here's
spend
the thing.
His Thanksgiving playing video games.
Here's the thing. We might have a musical intro. We're actually living in a liminal state right now, you and I, where it is possible that there was music that played just before this, and I recorded it and composed it after we recorded this. So it is possible that there is music. Just throwing that out
there. Wait, so you're saying that what I just said might be a lie?
Well, yeah, because you always begin these podcasts with a lie. This is what I'm saying. This is a real problem.
Actually, that'd be fun. We should just stick a lie into every single
into the beginning of
the screen and see if people figure it out.
Like, figure out what
it could
the lie
be a fun
is.
Game. Like,
then the ultimate lie, at the very end, we can reveal that this wasn't actually me and you doing the podcast and that we're like, you know, aliens or something. And that will be the ultimate
we're
lie.
We're from the Institute. My name is Jason Schreier, and this is Kirk Hamilton. Hi, Kirk.
Hi, Jason. How's it going, man?
Good. I had a nice little vacation there. Sorry, listeners, that we skipped last week's Thanksgiving episode. We were going to do something special for Thanksgiving, but decided not to. I mean, we just didn't.
We just didn't. Well, we did. I mean, I did something special for Thanksgiving. It just wasn't a podcast.
Right. That's what I mean. That's what I'm saying. Thank you, Mr. Literal over here.
Yeah, I thought I would just take you as literally as possible. How was your Thanksgiving, man? How was it?
It was good. I ate a lot. I took a few days off. I played a lot of video games, some Trails in the Sky, some Fallout. I think I've kind of given up on Fallout. I got to the point where there's a twist and then called it quits and was like, I don't really want to play anymore. Fallout 4 has made me think long and hard about a lot of things. And there's a question that I wanted to ask you, Kirk.
Yeah, all right.
Which Fallout 4 has made me think about. So Fallout 4 comes out, right? And you get all these reviews from people who have been playing the game nonstop for like 2 weeks since whenever mm-hmm. they got review copies. And most people were pretty psyched about it. And Bethesda games tend to make you pretty psyched as you're playing them. And it keeps making me ask myself this question about reviews and reviewing video games. And I keep coming back to the idea that video games are impossible to review until, like, you've had a month or so, or like a great deal of time to really let them sink into you. Like, it feels like Fallout 4 is this game that you can be hot on 1 second, cold on another second. It's like you're living in this world for a while. If you spend an entire week playing nothing but Fallout 4, of course you're going to be high on it and like say all these great things that you might not feel the same way about after you've let it sink in for a while. And I don't know, this is like I've been feeling this weird ambivalence and like frustration at the idea of like criticizing video games and how video games are such a time-consuming and like unique form of media that I don't think they can be critiqued and reviewed in the way that movies and books can. You know what I mean?
I mean, yeah. I of course, like, video games pose their own challenges for reviewing or criticism. Like, you know, I definitely don't agree that there's nothing that you can't. I mean, I think, like, for example, I think Patricia's Fallout review was great. It captured a lot and had a lot to say about the game. It wasn't some rose-tinted, oh my gosh, I love it so much, I'm obsessed kind of thing. Though, I mean, we see that sometimes, I think, from
weaker
critics.
But hold on. So Patricia's, sorry to interrupt you.
No.
Kirk, I know how much you love being interrupted.
Oh, yeah.
But Patricia's review was great, and then she came out with another piece yesterday about how Fallout 4 is, like, not for Fallout fans. And I thought that was more compelling than the review, and I thought it elaborated on the review in a way
right.
that makes it feel more thorough. But if you're going to say, like, a review is this thorough evaluation of a video game, then I think the review of Fallout 4 would have what she wrote in the review, and then also this, and also the thoughts that crystallize as she continues to play the game more and more. And, like, this is the type of thing where you keep playing this game and you keep thinking these things, and there's no way to thoroughly evaluate it after a week or 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, the idea that a review needs to be complete, I think, is self-defeating. Like, you're never going to get there with a review if you think, okay, this needs to be a complete review. I mean, there are some, it used to be more possible. I think Keith Stewart, right, just wrote a thing for The Guardian about this. And Steve and I actually have been talking about Kotaku reviews and how we're approaching them. So, and, you know, we're maybe going to be changing some things next year. We'll see. we'll tease that now. But yeah, I mean, video game reviews are hard. I've been writing them for, you know, a while now, and have thought a lot about how we can do them best. It's that one of the big challenges is it's different for every kind of game, right? Like, The Room 3. I could play through The Room 3. I've been playing that game. I could review that game, and it'd be a complete review. That's a game that I'm not going to feel differently about in a month. Fallout 4 is a game that's super huge. So, yeah, like you said, we feel differently about it. Then there's a game like Dota or something, you know, like that is closer to a sport. Like, how would you ever review that? But at the same time, well, but I would greatly admire a smart critic who could write a really cool review of Dota 2. I would read the hell out of that. And it doesn't have to be permanent. It doesn't mean the person's view of the game can't change. Like, you know, like you said, I think Patricia's review stands fine as an evaluation of the game alongside that cool article she wrote this week, which was about sort of how Fallout has changed. I also think in her that piece, she talked about her review and how, like, this idea that she didn't evaluate Fallout 4 in terms of the Fallout legacy, because her review is more focused on this game and what it is and whether it accomplishes what it sets out to accomplish. And I think that's probably a good approach, or at least a sensible approach, is to just say, does this game do what it sets out to do? Is it fun? You know, what does it do? As just a sort of basic evaluation. But there's so many different things that a review can be. It can be buyer's advice, which is certainly helpful, I think, for a lot of people. Games are expensive. They want to know if they're good. It can be something that allows insight into the game. It can be it can be social commentary. It can be performance art. It can be like a comedy piece. It can be a million different things. And
maybe the problem is that the word review. Maybe the problem is that the word review implies this thoroughness that might not be there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's okay. Like, I think it's a kind of a potent word, and it is loaded because, like you said, we can't evaluate these things the same as we do movies and, you know, and other things that get reviews, like quote review unquote. It's a different thing with games, and certainly video game reviews have a weird history. I personally like it. I like the sort of rhetorical weight of the word, and I like saying, you know, Fallout 4, the Kotaku review.
The Kotaku review. Yeah,
I enjoy that.
So
like,
definitive.
I like that better than, we've talked about this plenty of times. You know, we're constantly, I think Kotaku has probably changed our review format more times than maybe any other gaming site. And I think the headline, though, has been the same throughout, because I like that. It's something about it's striking, and it says,
review.
This is what we think of this game. And of course, that's not to say that won't change, but yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. And by the way, I forgot to mention, we have to give a hearty congratulations to Kirk Hamilton, who is now the deputy editor of Kotaku.com.
Yeah, I guess this is our first first podcast since that happened. Thanks, man.
Since you were promoted. Yeah, congratulations, man.
Thanks. I am now responsible for every stupid thing Kotaku has ever done. So, you know, sorry. Sorry about that. But the buck now stops here. So.
The buck now stops here. So congratulations. Hearty congrats.
Thanks, man.
Kirk, deputy editor. It's a cool title.
Yeah, it
badge.
Is. It is
you
cool.
Need a
it's funny
because
my old title was features editor, which was actually the title I was hired with. And that, you know, it made sense, like, in that I edited a lot of reviews and worked with freelancers on features. But it's also kind of a weird title where deputy editor actually means something, which is nice. Like, so, yeah,
right.
I'm excited.
Right. Yeah, it's nice. It feels like we have more structure now, and we're getting a managing editor soon, so that'll be good. But yeah, so back to the reviews thing real quick. So I think maybe one of the problems is that it feels too definitive when we say review, and stuff comes out later that makes us kind of change our minds about games. And there are a lot of games that have been kind of reviewed positively or even reviewed negatively only for the critical consensus to emerge later. in the polar opposite direction. Yeah. And maybe the other problem, and that's not even mentioning review scores, by the way, which are nonsense and also carry this weight of like, this game is a 7, this game is a 9.
Yeah, and to be fairness, you know, Kotaku, I think, actually does have that problem with our reviews. And this is something we've been talking about, is that, you know, our latest system has been this yes, no, not yet system. And I think that system has some problems. Like, speaking of like potent rhetorical things that I've enjoyed, I sort of enjoy the yes, no, or I have in the past, because there's just something enjoyable about it. I don't know. Like, I don't take that stuff as seriously as some people do. And I think, but I think it's confusing for readers. And it can be challenging for us as well when, like, a game is kind of like, fuck this game, like, we don't really like it, and we give it a no. That no can be very limiting in a way, because there are plenty of games that I would say, no, don't play this game. This game is, fuck this game. But at the same time, I would have plenty to say about it, or it's interesting, or, you know, like, it can be challenging in that. And let alone, you know, giving a score, which is even harder, saying like, oh, this game is a 6, but now I want to say all these things about it, and people, I don't like that, also is confusing. So verdicts are tough.
Yeah, and well, so it's not only that, it's also, I think this is something I keep coming back to when I think about games in general. I think the idea of a video game is just so all-encompassing, like, it includes so many different types of things that I think that is a fundamental problem with the way we approach games criticism, is that we look at everything as a video game. And, like, tonight, we're recording this on Thursday, this will probably be out on Friday, so the Game Awards will have already happened, but they're naming, this is like supposed to be the big award show, right? The Emmys or the Oscars of video games. And there's this idea that there's a game of the year, and that is the game of the year, which to me is so silly because there's so many different types of games of the year. They're like a video game could be anything. It could be Undertale. It could be Metal Gear Solid. It could be, I don't know. Last year, my game of the year was Threes. But how do you compare Threes to like the latest?
Can you imagine? I would love that so much if the game awards gave Threes game of the year.
Man,
it'd be a cool world.
This year it should be Box Boy. How come Box Boy is not nominated for anything?
I'm looking up the list of nominees right now. I want to look at the.
You are okay. Yeah,
I'm looking. At some, go ahead.
We should talk about that. Yeah, we should talk about.
Yeah,
that
I think that'd be
bit.
Fun.
But this idea that video game means so many different things—that's something that I keep coming back to and have for a while. And I think that's a problem in the way we approach things. And like you see it in the internet discourse when people are like, "Oh, Gone Home, that isn't a video game," or like Cybele, that was the most recent one that you played and really enjoyed. That game by Nina Freeman about a sex adventure, right?
I guess I'd call it a sex adventure. Sure.
But like, I think that maybe the name video game just is a problem, and maybe we need to get away from that.
I think we're in the middle of sort of evolving our language on it. I don't know. I mean, I think that enough people are familiar enough with what you're talking about when you say that it counts. And, you know, I mean, we could, let's not even get in, like, we could debate what is a video game and what isn't, but I mean, I think we both agree that basically anything.
No, anything's a video game. Yeah. No, that's not what I mean. I just mean I don't think that like treating games like Metal Gear Solid the way we treat games like Cybele and Undertale, there's something fundamentally wrong with that. And there's something fundamentally wrong with the fact that Kotaku might run a review of that in the same way.
I mean, I don't know about that. Like, I think that like in any media you're going to have that kind of a thing. And I mean, like, it's like reviewing a documentary versus reviewing a like Netflix or a YouTube short film versus reviewing The Godfather. I mean, those are all different too. Like, there are similarities in the media that are worth, you know, lumping together. And you can't, I mean, there's no real alternative. Like, at this point, if you're into video games, you're probably checking out all of this stuff, or at least a lot of it. And any good, you know, criticism review site is going to have critics who are better versed with different types of games. Like, you know, you can review a JRPG far better than I can. Another writer might be able to write about an esports game better than you or I could. Like, it's, you kind of just have to start specializing. But that doesn't mean that, I don't know, that the system's broken. It just means that it's sort of evolving. I mean, I agree. Like,
yeah, so
go ahead.
if you're specializing, if we have an esports person and a JRPG person, then how do you decide which gets the game of the year?
Year is silly, but it's no. I mean, honestly, like, I think the game of the year, all awards are silly. Like, the fucking Academy Award for Best Picture is silly. Like, that they never nominate. Or, like, the Grammy Awards? Like, holy shit. Like, if you follow the Grammy Awards, they're just a joke. Like, they never. It's, like, it's the same shit. Like, it's the same thing as anything. Like, it's the best movie of the year was probably not the thing that won Best Picture. The best album of the year.
Birdman? No,
was
Birdman
not was the not thing Bird. That won Best Album of the Year at the Grammys. It was probably something you've never heard of, or, like, a million different things. Like, it's always the big corporate stuff that gets nominated. It's always the albums everybody guesses. It's always the games. Like, I'm looking at the Game of the Year awards. It's so predictable. Like, Fallout 4, Bloodborne, Metal Gear 5, Super Mario Maker, The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt. I mean, even among those games, they're all good games, I think. Do I think they're all good? Yeah, I agree that Fallout 4 has some issues. They're all good, though. I mean, I liked them all, but, like,
I bet, you know, The Witcher wins. Like,
yeah, there's so many games that aren't on that list, and there are also, more problematically, there are games that just could never be on that list. Like, the way that there's, right, like, a best indie game, best downloadable game, because they have to...
Right, that's the ghetto where you put all those games.
Right, like, oh, Undertale gets best indie game, or something. Did it actually get that? Right. Where that game is... I still haven't played that game, but, like, I mean, played
much
of it.
What are the nominations for best indie game?
I'm trying to load it on my phone, but it's going really slow. I'm looking at Developer of the Year. That's kind of funny. Okay, let's see. Best Independent Game. What? There. This. Okay. Wait, really? Oh, that's cool. Oh, this is a good... Okay. The independent...
Wait, no. Yeah, okay. Let's just listen to your reactions of them. Let's not actually... I don't want to hear the list. Wait, really? Oh, that's cool.
Okay, Independent Game Award nominees. Axiom Verge. Okay.
Okay.
Didn't love
that's
it, but whatever.
That's the Metroid-like.
Her Story.
Okay.
Ori and the Blind. Yeah, that's an indie. I think it's Sam Barlow made that game. It's like a very small team made that game. Story. Ori and the Blind Forest.
That's not an indie. Wasn't that published by Microsoft?
Well, yeah, but it's... I guess it's an independent developer made it. Moon Studios made that game.
What? Hold on. Pause.
Okay.
Blind Forest. If a game is published by a multi-billion-dollar studio, corporation, whatever, it cannot be an indie game.
Well, let me finish the list and then we can debate this. Okay, so Ori and the Blind Forest, Rocket League, and Undertale are the nominees for Best Independent Game. Yeah, I mean, something's off, right? Like, Rocket League? Like, I mean, I guess it's independent. Yeah. Who published Rocket League? I actually don't know. I'm assuming maybe they just self-published that, like, because that was on PC and PS4.
Let me check, but I've been getting... I mean, they have a PR team. They have Reverb, so they are not an indie.
Okay,
they have a PR team.
Rather than go down this rabbit hole, because we could talk about it forever, I think maybe we can just say that the fact that there is even a list of independent, like, that there's a category for independent developers is dumb, because this already is like, what? Like, why should I be judging Rocket League and Ori and the Blind Forest and Undertale on a different metric than GTA or Metal Gear 5 and The Witcher 3? Like, what? Like, also, like, how is... I mean, CD Projekt Red is an independent studio. They're not owned by anybody. They're their own publisher. Like, how is that not an independent game when Moon Studios' Ori and the Blind Forest is? Like, how are they different except in scale, right? So this is like a... It's already just a stupid delineation.
Yeah, wait a minute. CD Projekt Red, yeah, that's more
an
independent
indie studio.
Than Ori.
The Witcher 3 is an indie game.
Yeah, they should
indie
switch
game
spots.
Of the year.
Witcher 3 and Ori and the Blind Forest.
Would that be awesome if The Witcher 3 was in the independent game category?
It should be. Man,
right, according to whatever this weird logic is.
Actually, I think the worst thing about the Game Awards is that they group together mobile and handheld.
Oh, really?
As
so
one
it's like,
category?
I don't think I'd even put that together. So it's like 3DS games and iPhone games.
Yeah, yeah.
That's funny. I'm going to look at what the nominees are.
Okay, yeah.
It'll take a minute.
Give us the nominees.
Oh, best mobile handheld game. Yeah, here we go.
Yeah, best mobile / handheld game.
We should say we're knocking this. Honestly, like, I admire Jeff Keighley a lot for putting this together. I should throw that out there. Like, I think it's really – he's worked really hard on this. I admire him in general. I think he's, like, a really – you know, he works just super hard and, like, obviously gives a huge amount of shits about this and really, like, put it together, which is cool. And as much as we're knocking it, I don't know. I mean, award shows are always a little bit silly. So, but okay. Anyway, back to knocking.
It's come a long way since.
Yeah, it's better, right? It's better, and it's fun. I don't know. Like, we haven't posted all the nominees.
In 2011, there was teabagging. God. There was the dude teabagging the people who spoke too long on stage. Remember that?
Yeah, I remember your article, right? That was like, I think that was before we worked together. That was just like, holy fuck. Yeah. I don't remember like what the article was beyond. Like, this is just an embarrassment.
Yeah.
Okay, so best mobile handheld game. Downwell.
Okay.
I haven't played that. I've heard that's really, really good. The Idle Thumbs dudes are always talking about that game. I should really play it. It's apparently great. Downwell, Fallout Shelter, Lara Croft Go, Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate, Pac-Man 256. That's it. That's the list. One of these games is not like the others.
Jesus Christ.
Monster Hunter 4. Monster Hunter 4 versus Pac-Man 256. Like, how can you even compare those two games?
I think that should be a Kotaku article. Monster Hunter 4 during versus Pac-Man 256. The comparison we had to make.
The comparison that nobody really wanted to make. That's funny. But then there's no... I mean, I guess were there other good... Like, what? Jeez. I see no Pokemon Picross on here. Steven says
no
that's
Box
fun.
Boy?
Yeah, no Box Boy. What the fuck, man?
Yeah, yeah, wait a minute. There's still video games coming out. Why are the Game Awards
well,
on December 3rd?
Well, that's the other thing is that, like, and then Fallout 4 is a nominee. I mean, what the hell does that even mean? Like, I feel like I still don't know what to make of that game. And, I mean, nominees were in it. Like, you know, people must have, I don't know. The whole thing is weird. Like I know so much about The Witcher 3. I have such a solid conception of that game. But Fallout 4, I'm just like, don't even know. So how can you even say
that?
Best
it's
narrative.
It's all very strange.
I'm going to keep going
through
people,
these. I keep seeing people tweet, like other games reporters at other outlets tweeting about how they're putting together their Game of the Year conversations now. And it's just like, wait, like the
That's
we still
always
have like
tricky.
A solid,
yeah.
solid 25 days left in the year. Before,
to me, a lot of that feels like habit. I think we get trapped in that too because we do a year interview thing. And I know Steven is always a little bit like, God, do we really have to do this just because it's so like, do we have to do this just because everyone else is doing it? We get kind of like it can be fun to do that stuff, but it's definitely you're like, okay, it's December, it's time to do year in review shit, and we don't like think well, but also like I haven't finished Soma, I haven't finished the Bloodborne DLC, I haven't finished Undertale, I haven't finished so many things. Why are we having this conversation now when we could wait at least until you know the end of the month to give ourselves more time?
But we're not doing games of the year. We're not doing that until January,
right? And we don't do one game of the year anymore. That was a change last year.
Which is phenomenal.
Really good change. Yeah, to just say, here's 12 games that we really liked this year. And honestly, like to pick one among... I mean, how could I possibly pick between Bloodborne and The Witcher 3? Like, I loved both of those games.
And Boxboy.
And Boxboy. I have no way of making that distinction. And, you know, and I think about video games a lot, and there's just... I don't think there's a way to do it.
I mean, you laugh, but I think Boxboy is just as excellent at
no, it's
doing
a brilliant
it
game.
Set out
oh,
to
no, no,
do.
No, I know. I laugh just because it's a bit of a, like, the way that you always bring it up is funny. But it's,
well,
a great game.
Hey,
it's a great
gotta talk about Boxboy. What about Trails in the Sky? I bet that's not winning any awards because nobody has actually played it.
Right, and so it didn't get nominated.
It's funny how much marketing affects these awards, because marketing affects what games journalists and media are actually playing, and what they're playing turns into Game of the Year awards. Like if people had actually played Trails in the Sky, if journalists had actually taken the time to sit down and play those games, maybe they would nominate them for some awards.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like not totally fair to expect people to do that only because, I mean, come on, there's like, especially with video games, they're
right,
a billion
there are
hours long and there's a million of them. It's all like we've basically laid out a pretty effective case, I think, over the last 20 minutes for just how an award show is fun. It's not particularly meaningful. I still kind of like award shows just because it lets us have like silly conversations like this one where we just kind of argue about which games we like and why. Well, I think that does allow for a kind of insight into a game. As much as it's muddled and all over the place, it's fun to talk about, you know, which games had an impact over you. And a year can feel like a weird distinction. Like it always bugs me when people say the best game so far this year. I'm like, okay, why does it matter? You know, why does this frame of time matter? But at the same time, I get it. Like it, you know, you need to draw a line somewhere. Otherwise, everything is going to be compared to everything else, and that's sort of just harder to do. So I see why they would do it that way.
Are there any other good categories, funny categories?
I should look. Okay,
Developer of the Year is a funny one.
It is, and it's like Nintendo, Bethesda.
Oh,
right?
Nintendo. Oh, yeah. Developer of the Year.
You don't say. It's kind of weird, actually. Okay, yeah. Developer of the Year. Oh, man. You could probably guess them. Bethesda.
Okay, wait. Let me guess.
Yeah,
let me guess.
All right, try to guess.
I haven't. So Bethesda.
Yeah.
Nintendo.
Yeah.
CD Projekt Red.
Yep.
Yeah. How many more are there? Two?
There's two more.
Two more. Sony or From Software. From Software.
Yep.
Really?
And one more, and you're gonna get the last one. Just think about it. What developer would it be? Like what studio? I can give you a clue if you want.
Oh, Konami? Kojima Productions?
Yeah,
Konami?
Kojima Productions. That's developers of the year.
Wait, so it's just the game of the year developers.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe that's those actually five. The rule. I guess that's kind of like, no, they don't do that with Best Director, do they? It's just usually the Best Director is also Best Picture. That's sort of similar, I guess. This developer of the year is weird. I mean, honestly, like, I sort of like the idea, honestly, because I like recognizing developers. I think that's cool. Even though these developers are all don't really need recognition. I think CD Projekt Red deserves some special credit this year just because they actually have done something really special with the way they've curated The Witcher 3 and run that game. Like, that game is, I liked that game a lot when it came out, and I like it way more now, and it's largely because of the really special thing they've done with it after release and how great of a developer they've been. Though, honestly, I think, is it Techland who made Dying Light? I think they should be nominated, man. Like, have you followed that game much? That's another studio that reminds me of CD Projekt Red, and that they're constantly putting out cool new shit and talking to their players, and they're like obsessed with their own game after release in this really cool way. So that's actually kind of weird they're not on there.
Well, it came out in January, so it doesn't count.
Who cares? It was barely 2015.
I think The Witcher 3 will win Game of the Year.
It probably should. I mean, I think Bloodborne maybe on a design level is the most impressive thing, but The Witcher 3 is fucking incredible. I mean, I've played that game all the way through twice now. It's just, it is an incredible game. Like, it deserves it. I mean, all the games on that list were good in their own ways, but yeah, that game for me anyway was pretty special.
Hey, you know what game you should play?
What?
Final Fantasy 14.
I was not expecting you to say that. I was totally expecting you to say that.
No, you were expecting me to say like Suikoden 2 or Trails in the Sky, both of which you still have not played more of.
Any other week I would have been expecting you to say that, but this week you've been, this is like, basically, so for listeners, what we work in Slack, you know, in the chat thing, and basically my Slack interactions with Jason each day begin with him telling me to play some game or other, and this is just our relationship, and this week that game has been Final Fantasy 14, so I was very much expecting you to say that, though, in another week, yeah, maybe a different game.
Well, hey, I mean, if you play 14, we can play it together and, like, talk on PSN and shoot the shit like we used to do back when we actually played Destiny.
Yeah, it's funny that I don't want to get sidetracked, but whatever, let's get sidetracked. I think that that is interesting, actually, that Final Fantasy 14 will come back to you. I have played that game. I've got a character, and I do want to play with you. But it's funny how we haven't talked because we haven't been playing Destiny. And then this week we played a little bit of Destiny, and it was really funny. We loaded it up, and like, it was like Mike and Adam and Russ and sort of the guys we normally play with, and just hearing them all again and kind of talking, I was like, oh, this is nice. It's my friends. Like, I haven't talked to them in a month. And it really, it underlined for me the social pull that those kinds of games have. And you know, I've never played MMOs, but I know that's a thing, but I really missed everyone, and it made me realize I almost want to start playing Destiny again just because I kind of miss talking about movies with, you know, Mike Rougeau and Russ Brushtick and the other guys we play with. And, yeah, I don't know. It was interesting. It just struck me.
Did you miss telling people not to die?
I didn't tell anybody not to die.
That's true.
Something.
But nobody, because nobody died.
Well, no, everybody died. Are you serious? Remember, we like did the Oryx War Priest challenge, and then like it was a mess, and people kept dying.
Oh, that's
true. Despite the fact I didn't, it was, you know why they died, right, Jason? Because why? I didn't tell them not to die.
Oh,
they forgot.
Oh, right.
They forgot. Weren't supposed to die because they didn't have me to helpfully remind them.
Yeah, man. Well, you're deputy editor now. You need to be telling everyone not to die.
Right. I'll Kotaku be commanding
staff,
it.
Do not die.
Okay. Hi, everybody. Good morning. Today, we're all going to not die. Nobody die. First important directive from your deputy editor.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
Okay. It's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Bite clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
But yeah, Final Fantasy 14. I mean, I don't think it'll be as, like, you can't chat as much as you can with Destiny because there's actually a lot of story to read and, like, cutscenes to watch and whatnot as you're doing the main story quest. So it's actually it's an MMO that is really fun to play by yourself.
Right. Do you think that that holds up after? I mean, I'm guessing you're maybe like in the 20 to 30 hour mark. Do you think that that holds up once you finish the story? Like, I have a feeling that that game, that the usual thing is you play through the story and then you start doing dungeons and raids. And when you're doing those, maybe it's easier to talk over. You start repeating things the same
as
you do in Destiny.
Yeah. I think you're right. Yeah. But getting there is like a way bigger commitment than it is in Destiny.
When I played that game, I played solo almost all the time. I think we did a dungeon together and played some, but it was cool because
Was fun. Yeah, we did that with Patrick.
Yeah, it was fun. Not Klefek, we should say. Patrick Klefek does not
Patrick
play
Allen,
Final Fantasy XIV.
From Life Hacker.
Patrick Allen. But it was fun to play solo. I really like it. You just linked me. Man, the music in that game is absurd. It's really absurd.
Yeah,
it's such
so
a
good,
big
man.
Part of the appeal. It's so good. All of it's so good.
One of the things they did, I believe, when Heaven's Ward came out, that's the expansion that came out earlier this year, is they boosted all the experience on the older quests, so you level a lot faster now.
Oh, really?
So it's easier because they want people to get up to the new stuff. So I've been playing through, I've been having so much fun this week playing Final Fantasy 14, and I think I'm going to stick with it for a little while just because it's like the music is so good and exploring is so much fun and like the story is legit. I did a quest the other day. I'm still fairly early. I'm only like level 25, but I did a quest the other day where you fight Ifrit, the summoning monster.
Oh, yeah,
in the party, and that was really cool.
What class are you playing? I can't remember.
I'm a tank, a gladiator.
Oh, okay.
But the way it works is you can switch between
you can switch classes.
Class.
I'm trying to – it's like a job system, right? Like at a certain level, you can just switch classes. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so like I was leveling up a conjurer, which is the white mage basically, because you have to have a class and then a subclass leveled up to get a job. So like if I want to be a paladin, I have level 30 gladiator and level 15 conjurer to get there. So yeah, man, it's super fun. The music is so good. I'm like sitting there with my headphones on, rocking out. Like I was thinking I want to listen to podcasts or like watch TV shows or something while doing some of the arbitrary grinding and stuff and like killing monsters and whatnot. But I don't want to because the music is so good that I just want to listen to it the whole time.
Yeah, I found that about it too.
I mean, yeah, I spent this week, I wanted to play some Fallout, I wanted to play some Witcher, I wanted to play a bunch of stuff, but then I jumped into Final Fantasy 14 and I was like, man, this is awesome.
Fun. So there's a promotion going on right now. I always get, it's funny, like, I was talking to you about this last night, I think, that what's the promotions deal? It's like 96 hours free. Does that mean that from when you start you have 96 hours or that you have 96 total hours?
No, man, I wish it was like
that. That'd be so much better.
They wouldn't make money. And I was thinking about how much money it must cost to keep this game going because there's just so much writing and so many quests and so much dialogue. And like,
did they add that stuff or did they just do
time.
That all at once?
I don't know. I haven't been playing long enough to know how much stuff they've added. But they added like the Golden Saucer earlier this year and Triple Triad. Triple Triad is so much fun. And all this new Heavensward stuff that I'm excited to check out.
It sounds like Heavensward is amazing. I mean, Fahey was saying it's really, really good, which was cool. Yeah. I got that installed now and want to check it out.
Yeah, the story. I mean, the story so far, it's been really cool. I like it a lot. There's they're like characters that you get to know, and it's very, it feels like Final Fantasy, even though it's an MMO. It feels very much it feels more like Final Fantasy than 13 did.
Right.
And hopefully 15 channels some of what makes 14 great.
I'm definitely going to play more. We'll play together. We should. It's a time thing, as always, especially this time of year, because there's a lot of other stuff I got to play.
It is a time thing. But yeah, people always ask us what the hardest part of this job is. I think it's that there are too many video games.
It's definitely a challenge. If you want to actually know what you're talking about, you have to play so many games.
Yeah.
Speaking of so many games, I played another
too
game
many
over break.
Games?
You mentioned it before. We were going to talk about Nina's game, Nina Freeman's game, Sibel. Which
Sibel.
Which is interesting. I thought it was really cool. Patricia already wrote about it for the site. It wasn't really for coverage. I just had it on my Mac, and I knew it was pretty short, so I played it. And do you know about this game beyond the fact that it's a sex adventure?
Well, tell readers.
I'm just wondering if you know, but I'll tell you and readers
vaguely.
So it's interesting. It's a game that is set. It takes place on a desktop, like on a computer desktop, which is sort of a trend this year because it's similar to Her Story in that way. And you're playing basically as Nina. So Nina Freeman, for those who don't know, she's an indie developer. She actually lives here in Portland near me. She's working for Fulbright, for Steve Gaynor, making their new game, Tacoma. But she also makes games on her own. And this is her new one. It came out, I'm not sure, but maybe a month ago or something on Steam. So it's super personal and autobiographical. It's like a true story of basically her falling in love with a guy when she's like in college, so of like first love, and sort of losing her virginity to this dude that she met in an online game. And I believe the game was Final Fantasy Online in real life, but in the game it's a made up game that I can't pronounce the name. But it's so you actually play this game in the game. So her desktop is kind of there. There's stuff all around, there's like folders and pictures of her and her friends and emails, and you kind of can get, it's cool because you're sort of looking through her stuff and reading and learning more about what's going on in her life and who her friends are just purely through her desktop, which is a smart idea that I think more games are exploring, because we can learn a lot about a person just by looking at their computer desktop. But then you can also go into this game, and when you go into the game, you start playing with this guy, Ichi, who's the guy she's sort of falling for. And it has, I think, four chapters. It's really short. I think I beat it in less than an hour. I finished it in less than an hour. And you play the game. It's the game is really simple. You like walk around together and kind of click on things and kill them. So it's meant, I think, more as it's to sort of like metaphorically channel the feeling of just playing an MMO with somebody than to be a really meaningful game on its own. And then while you play, you hear this recorded VO where she talks to him, and they're really awkward and super cute. And it's like them kind of getting to know each other, and just that. That kind of it's awkward. It's like an awkward game.
Feels like it would be hard to listen to.
Well, it's not they do a good job, because it is acting. It's not, it doesn't feel totally real. Like it's Nina performing her own parts, and I'm trying to think, it's an actor, I think, or another guy, I don't know who he is, who performed the part
Troy
of
Baker.
Troy Baker. Of course, Troy Baker and Nolan North. It's just them. He's kind of an awkward dude. She's an awkward girl. You can tell that it's just, they're young, and it reminds you of when you were stupid and young and all of that. And it just, it's a neat game. It kind of, I liked it. It ended a little abruptly, which I guess is kind of the point. It's like a quick snapshot of a moment in time. And as that, I think it's really effective as like a story with a theme or like a full kind of conception. There were times where I felt like it was a little underdeveloped, but I what it was doing was very cool, and I've never really played a game that's done that, though I'm guessing it's not the only one of its kind. It's neat. I really recommend people check it out. It's short, you can play through it, and
it's
the kind
Steam.
Of thing that if you, it's a really universal story, which is what I liked about it. It's something that I feel like anybody, close to our generation or anyone who grew up with computers will really like. You'll feel it when you play it. It'll remind you of things in your own life, like of just the times when you met people online and stuff. And I thought that was cool. I like this sort of desktop game idea. Did you play Her Story? I can't remember.
Wait, hold on. Sibel, it's on Steam?
Oh, yeah. I thought you said desktop game. Yeah, it's on Steam. It's a PC game.
How much is it?
I don't know. Like $10 maybe.
Oh, that's a lot. No?
I don't know. Is it?
I don't know.
That's, I mean, no.
Seems like a lot for a game that like this. I don't know who knows what value is, but
yeah, I don't know if it should be more or less. I would pay $10 for it. I got it on Steam Pass, so whatever. But I liked it. Did you play Her Story? Sort of similar game?
No. I would like to.
Yeah, you should play that. Play them both. They're both interesting, because Her Story is a similar setup. It's more of a like deliberate narrative and less of a just sort of snapshot of time game. But it's, you know, it's this mystery that you're piecing together by searching archival footage on an old PC.
Right. Yeah, yeah,
the, yeah. So it's cool because it's a similar idea where the whole game takes place on a PC and you're playing on a PC.
Yeah.
So it's this kind of nice self-contained thing. That I mean, they're also, that's like a genre of movie now, which I didn't even know. I was watching Every Frame a Painting, that that really good YouTube channel, and he was talking about, Tony, the guy who makes those videos, was talking about how that's a genre of film now that I haven't seen yet, but it's like a type of movie that takes place entirely on a computer desktop, which is, I think, the same idea, and is very smart. Like, I think that's like a really smart evolution of storytelling to do it that way, and it lends itself to games, obviously, really well.
We need a new genre, desktop games.
It kind of is. It's kind of is a genre. I was actually trying to think.
Does Minesweeper count?
No, because it's just a desktop game. It doesn't actually
make
a desktop.
Right.
Like, I feel like there have been lots of, this would actually, I've been thinking about this for an article, like how there have been a lot of computer desktops and operating systems within games, and how that's always kind of cool when games do that. And it's even becoming now there are whole games where they're based around a made up operating system. It's always a neat thing to see, I think.
The operating system game. Interesting.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
Video games can be so many things.
Well, right. I mean,
I want to see, maybe we need a game awards category for operating system game.
That'll be the new category. And then they would just add some games that you play through your operating system. Like sort of like the indie game doesn't really make sense. Anyway, so that was a cool game. That was a cool game that I played.
Okay.
I could talk about
you
all
also
the games
played,
I'm playing forever.
You also played Just Cause 3, right? How's that?
I did. I was mixed on it. I was really mixed on it. More mixed than I was sort of surprised at how glowing a lot of the acclaim on it was. Because
are you hold on. Are you ever really surprised when there's glowing acclaim for a big budget video game?
Yeah. Yeah, when the game has a lot of like really clear flaws that are that clear,
really,
and then
though?
I just see people saying this
on.
Is the most fun thing I've ever done in my life.
After Dragon Age 2, I don't think you can ever be surprised. When,
no, but you know what I mean.
Enemy.
Like, of course, yes. Like, everybody's terrible. I mean, like...
No, it's not that everybody's terrible. It's that video games, just like something about them, I think gives you Stockholm Syndrome, where it's very difficult to really critically analyze a game when you've just spent 50 hours playing it. And I think you tend to be higher on it because you've invested that much time.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of think that with this game, it's a little bit different. The sense that I got was that, like, this in so many ways, this is a game. I was challenged by this too. Just Cause 3. So people who don't know, Just Cause 3, sequel to Just Cause 2. This game is pretty much about flying around this huge, beautiful island, blowing shit up. And the it's appealing. It's a really appealing game. Really appealing. I said this in my review. I don't actually actively find myself wishing a game were better very often, because a lot of times I'm like, all right, well, this is what it is. I've got a million games to play. I've played a million games. I don't need this game to be any one thing or another. I'm just going to play what it is and then talk about it. With this game, I really, really wished that it had just been, I don't know, a little bit better. It's so good when it's good. It's so cool. It's so appealing. It has this, like, this charming cast of characters. It's gorgeous looking. It's when you fly around in this game, it's so awesome. And some of the things you can do in it are just incredible. And it's just like, it's a lot of things that I love about games. It has a crazy tool set that it just gives you. It lets you just fuck around. It has, no, you know, it is very undirected in a lot of ways. And that's so cool. But then it just has these problems that drive me nuts. It pissed me off so often that, you know, just the AI is a disaster. Like, so often things fall apart. It doesn't perform very well on PC. The frame rate drops like crazy and it would crash for me all the time. On consoles, it has lots of frame rate issues, and it's just not smooth to play, so it's sort of uncomfortable. And there were just so many things about it that bothered me, where I was seeing this brilliant game in there. It really did kind of leave me feeling extremely torn. The whole time I was playing it, I kept going back and forth on it, like, I really like this game. Ugh, I can't stand this game. Oh, no, wait, it's actually really fun. Oh, no, I can't stand it, which is a challenging thing to go through with a game like that, where you really want it to be better. And I picked up on some of that, I think, in some of the reception and then the way people talk about it. People really want it to be good, and you can definitely have a lot of fun with it. It felt surprising that a lot of people were willing to just let that be enough, which, you know, is fair if they had a great time, and I don't think they didn't have a great time. I think anyone who said they had fun with it probably had fun with it. I for my own take, I was like, this game has a lot of really obvious major problems that are worth talking about, basically.
Is it possible that other people just didn't run into the same AI and technical issues?
Yeah, I mean, that's always going to be an issue with an open world game. Like, yeah, maybe, or maybe they're just better than I am. I mean, I got pretty good at it, but it could well be that, like, if you're amazing at this game, you can pull off some incredible stunts and incredible shit, and maybe they're just better. And yeah, it could be that people had fewer performance issues or weren't bothered by them as much. It's all subjective, and it's all based on the experience you had. I would be surprised, honestly. Like, the AI stuff and the just general chaotic jankiness of combat, those aren't things that I think only happen to me. Like, I think that's just the game, and that it's very difficult to look at that stuff and not say, okay, this is not good. Like, this just is not good, and here's why it doesn't work. But, you know, I mean, I don't know. That's other people's reviews. My own take on it is it's a very flawed game that I gave it a not yet, which is our way of saying it's got technical problems. I would recommend it, certainly, to people who want a game to fuck around in. Like, it's very fun.
That goes back to what we were talking about earlier and the kind of definitive evaluation that we provide with the review. A game like that, I think, shows some flaws with the yes/no, not yet system.
Yep, I agree.
And it makes me wonder if there should be a yes but or a no but or something like that.
Yeah, or like, I mean, it definitely does. It eliminates some issues with that, I think, just because it's not. It's a game that I would, you know, it's the way we think about it. You know, since our verdict is, should you play this game? And the answer is sure, yeah, like, play this game. As long as you know what you're getting, as long as you know that what it is and what it isn't, absolutely. People are going to do awesome stuff with this game. It's funny. It was made with a ton of heart. It's huge. There's a ton of shit to do in it. It's charming and cool. And then when it's really going, I mean, you got to play. I mean, I guess, did you play this game ever? I thought you played it at E3 or something like that. I can't remember.
Yeah, I did. I played it at Judges Week.
Yeah, I mean, the wingsuit you have in this game, you have a wingsuit and a parachute and a grappling hook. It's amazing. Like, the work they put into balancing how you have to control your flight and pull yourself along is just unbelievable. It's like one of the best mechanics I've ever, you know, well, ever. It's one of the best mechanics I've felt in the video game in a long time. And so if you were into that, I mean, yeah, I recommend it for all of that, despite the fact that there are these big problems that kind of drove me nuts about it.
Mm. It was made in New York, by the way. One of the few video game studios that's here in Manhattan.
Are they Avalanche entirely in New York? Are they're
no, well, so they have two studios. They're based in Sweden, in Stockholm, I believe, and they have a studio out here. And I went and visited them a couple of months ago and had dinner with a couple of the head honchos there, the director of the game and the studio, and they were telling me all about how they want to get more game developers to come to New York and, like, are fighting for tax breaks and whatnot, which is cool. It's cool to see New York-based development studios. I hope that if this game doesn't do well, I hope it doesn't drive them out or something like that. But when I visited, it seemed like they were all having fun. It seemed like a small studio. Fun fact. So I used to work for The Onion back in the day. I was an intern for their video team, and I worked in their office in New York. They've since moved from New York. They had an office in Soho, 736 Broadway. So they've since moved from there to Chicago. And Avalanche is now in the same exact office where The Onion is.
Oh, really?
So it was funny. Going and visiting them and being like,
holy
shit. They
got some of that Onion mojo carrying over.
Yeah, so maybe it's all satire. All of Just Cause 3 is just
I should really say it's hard to – not every game gives you a sense of the people who made it, but Just Cause 3 gives me a very positive sense of the people who made it. I think it's one of the reasons that I find myself, you know, wanting it to be better than it is and also liking it in general. It's a very, like, generous, good-spirited game. It really just has a great spirit to it, and you can tell the people who made it with a lot of love. Like, they really – cared about it. It's not some corporate product. It's definitely, it feels like something that real people made that they cared about and that they wanted it to be super fun, like them, which is nice because not all games actually feel that way. So it's a really nice thing about it.
Yeah. And it seems like a small team. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I won't speak to their development processes, but maybe they were crunching a lot and had to hit a deadline. And
I'm sure it's hard as hell to make a game like that work. I mean, I don't doubt that. I do. I think they, the last thing I saw, I've been kind of following it, they said, one of the developers on Steam said they're working on a patch to address some of the technical problems. So hopefully, it seems based on the game, like it's the kind of thing they care, like that they do want it to work better. So hopefully a patch will come soon.
Are there any developers that don't care? Give me an example of a developer that doesn't care.
Well, that's not what I mean.
No, you're supposed to say something.
There are games that get released, and whether the developer cared or not, the publisher or whoever tells, you know, whoever dictates that, the game just doesn't get any post-release support. Or the problems are deemed too small to be worth fixing. And then there are studios that illustrate kind of above and beyond what we're used to. Things like we were talking about with CD Projekt Red. Like, CD Projekt Red has demonstrated something beyond most developers. It's not to say other developers don't care as much as CD Projekt Red. It's just sometimes actions speak loudly, and you know, when a developer does that after a game comes out and really puts in the extra time to like fix it and make it work as well as possible, that says a lot,
and it earns a lot of goodwill from fans.
Definitely,
I think people really underestimate how important that is to get that kind of that reputation that you're one of the good guys in gaming.
Yeah, no, it's nice because I think people still feel kind of like burned by big corporations, and the minute you see that them act that way, like definitely in the response to CD Projekt, it's nice. It's still refreshing in this day and age to have anybody in any company that big treat you well, treat a consumer well. It's kind of depressing that that's true, but it is nice.
Hey, let's do a couple of reader questions.
Yeah, cool. This is good. We're going long. We could just keep going. Yeah, let's do some questions.
Well, we skipped last week, so we should go. We should go a little long.
I
think.
That's true. Okay, fair. Let's do some questions. Hit me.
Make up for last week with some ear goodness for the fans out there. Hey guys, says Alex Browder. Hope all is well. As I've gotten older, I feel I've become more cynical of game development. Years ago, if you told me a new Rainbow Six or Battlefront was coming out, I would have been ecstatic. Wait, pause. There's a new Rainbow Six out.
Yeah, there is. It's out. It's a game.
It's out.
It came out.
It's a video game. Now, says Alex, when games like this are announced, the first thing I think of is, I wonder how much the season pass will be, and I'm sure there's no single player, etc. I've told myself this is because times have changed, and this is how it is now. But back when the GameCube was out, I thought that was the best thing in the world. Almost everything I played in that era was good to me. Games could still suck, but I knew when a big sequel was coming, it would, for the most part, be good. But looking back, lots of people were let down by games then as well. Is it an age thing? Am I just more aware now that I can see how companies want to screw me? The TLDR is, does age make you more aware of companies' wrongdoings? Also, Alex says, I heard Kirk's dark side made Jason quit on Oryx the other night. That's messed up, Kirk.
That is not accurate. In fact, Jason, you were the one who very wisely bailed first, and we were all kind of ready to go. So it was not time.
Oryx.
My infamous, terrifying dark side that apparently exists didn't really have anything to do with it. I mean, this question.
Oryx on hard mode sucks.
Yeah, agree. That's kind of funny. That I feel like that question is what I was kind of just talking about. It like sort of picks up for that same idea.
Yeah.
I think that this is Alex. I think Alex's question, answer your question, Alex, I think that age does have something to do with that, at least insofar as saying, oh, when I was a kid and a game came out, I was just always excited and knew it to be mostly good. But then when I look back, I see that people were disappointed in sequels then too. Like, I think that, age and just life experience certainly plays a part in that. Like, when I was a kid, I didn't understand how corporations and publishers worked. I didn't think about any of that. I think that to an extent that's true.
When you're a kid, you kind of play bad video games and think they're good because you don't really have that kind of critical sense.
Right, and there just were fewer games then. Like, it just was, there just weren't that many games out, where now there are millions of them and they're way bigger. So it's partly that. It's partly that, you know, the model has changed. We get bigger games that are more ambitious with huge teams making them, and that means there's more wrong with them when they launch. Post-release support is a thing that didn't even used to exist, so now they can launch a game and say, well, we'll fix it if it doesn't quite work right. The season pass thing is interesting. Man,
Have you ever bought a season pass?
Let me think. I've been considering it more. So it's funny because in our, you know, in our jobs, a lot of times we get all that stuff for free. They send it to us, and so we don't really have to consider it. But man, you know, I've been buying more games this year, consciously, and then also just because Ubisoft and Bethesda don't send us games, so we just, you know, buy their games, that kind of thing, which has been really good, I think, in general. I'm really happy to be doing it. It's partly a luxury because, you know, we have jobs and can afford to buy games and also can rationalize to ourselves, okay, I need to buy this for work. But I bought Batman Arkham Knight for PS4 because the PC version was fucked up and I was like, I just want to play this game. So I got it on PS4, $60 to buy the game. The season pass for that game, I believe, was $50 after just paying $60. And it was a really nice reminder where it was not academic, that decision for me. And I didn't buy the season pass, which it sounds like, you know, the DLC has been kind of disappointing for that game, but it was definitely like a reminder of, holy shit, these things have gotten expensive. Like, that's almost as much as the game cost just to get a season pass.
And when they were selling the season pass, they also didn't say what was actually in it, right?
Right, and a lot of times you don't know. You're buying it up front, where, like, with a game like, you know, The Witcher 3, to come back to that again, I guess, the season pass for that gets you one thing. It gets you those two, you know, kind of meaty DLC chunks. And having played the first one, I'd say it's totally worth it because it was amazing, and I feel like the second one will probably be just as good. But we got a lot of free stuff out of that. That sort of felt like a good compromise. But the season pass thing is tricky. I think that kind of thing and making these games more expensive has definitely made people grumpier, just in general grumpier about all of this stuff. Understandably so, because it feels like a lot of money, especially mm-hmm. when games are launching kind of broken or you know, in not in great shape, but you're being asked to pay so much up front.
Yeah, it's a problem. It's interesting because there are kind of two sides to this question that we've experienced, like, firsthand. And the first side is that from the developer's perspective, video game making has gotten more expensive than ever. And, like, to keep people employed long term, you need another source of revenue outside of the game, and mm-hmm. season passes and DLC, like, helps keep people employed. And then from the gamer's perspective, it's like companies are shipping more and more broken games and asking you to pay for things sight and seen, and you just keep feeling like you're getting screwed over by these big publishers. So it's like we're in this kind of like tricky quagmire that's only getting worse and worse over time as fans get more frustrated and games get more expensive to make. And it kind of feels like there's no like foreseeable way out.
Yeah, it feels a little like inflation, right? The whole thing, it just feels like it's inflating and it's sort of fueling itself. And both things are understandable. Like you said, I mean, making a game like Grand Theft Auto 5 or something or The Witcher is a crazy undertaking. Like, that, to do that is absolutely harder than making whatever GameCube game back in the day was. It's an, like, orders of magnitude more complicated and challenging. Games don't work right. I mean, you know, even getting a game to ship sometimes feels like a miracle, I sense, from developers that I talk to. So that's understandable. But then that's not, you know, from our perspective. And we generally cover this stuff from a more, you know, from a player-oriented viewpoint. That still doesn't mean that these games should be launching the way that they are and that it's forgivable or whatever for it to be okay for them to get your money up front and send you something that just doesn't work, especially in the case of, you know, of something like Arkham Knight, like on PC, which was so fucked up that they pulled it. And, you know, it's good, really good that you can get a refund now for that kind of stuff. All of it fuels that negativity, which, to get back to Alex's question, I think that is new. That's not something, you know, it's not just like you're older, it was the same back then. That all is totally a new paradigm. So,
well, there's no Twitter back then.
That too. We didn't have immediate means of expressing our anger. But I think it's obviously, you know, that's the obvious answer is it's complicated and there's a lot to it. But I think it's both. It's that we're older.
It feels in some ways like there's going to be a crash or a catastrophe of some sort, and that like doom and gloom is inevitable.
Yeah, I wonder.
Which is kind of scary.
Yeah, I mean, if it means that it's if that's the ultimate representation of a broken system, which the broken system finally breaks and collapses on itself, then that's actually, in the long run, not terrible, even though it would be terrible. You know, it would mean a lot of people lose their jobs and a lot of bad things happen. It's also any broken system that collapses on itself, that's just going to happen, and that's the way it goes, and hopefully is replaced by something that works better. But yeah, I don't really know. It'd be interesting. There's a lot, there's a lot that seems pretty dysfunctional about the current system, so.
Yeah, and it feels like, I mean, there's a demand for higher and higher graphical fidelity and better, better looking games and 60 frames per second and 1080p resolution. And that's all totally fair, but with it comes all these rising costs, and it's impossible to have one without, like, these publishers trying to make money in other ways through selling.
Yeah, it's tough. It makes me think sometimes about, like, part of it is a technology problem, and that it is a solvable, in theory, technology problem, in that every game is reinventing the wheel, every game is inventing its own tech, every game has to, like, be trying new shit all the time. If, you know, it's like, it's you know, this is a half-formed thought. It's like if in movies you had to design the whole damn thing every time, and you had to build your own new camera and your own new everything technique, instead of just saying, I'm going to go buy a camera, use all these kind of tried and true approaches, and do a lot of pre-production and just know what I'm getting into. With games, you just so often it's like, well, we're doing a whole new engine and a whole new approach and a whole new thing. And it's partly because games are such untested waters and people are always doing new stuff, which is what's exciting about them. But it's also the thing that causes each game to feel like this massive experiment and undertaking, where in a world where there was just, you just could be creative within, you know, a framework, which is kind of what game engines allow for to an extent. As that evolves, I could see that being a way out anyway.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. And it does seem like people are having success. Well, I don't know. I mean, there are games that try new things on Unity and Unreal and all these kind of middleware
or even
engines.
Like RPG Maker, or like even simpler programs like that, or Twine.
I think all games should be made in RPG Maker.
Right. That's going to be the solution. There will be a huge video game crash, and then everything will just be RPG Maker all the time.
Dude, that would make me so happy.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
That would be my ideal video. I'll
probably be all right with it.
RPGs and visual novels. That's the only thing I need.
Yeah, that'll be the
more
the
games
new,
like Trails in the Sky.
The new era. Would we have one more question to do?
Yeah. Gabriella Everett asks on Twitter, what role do you think games media will play in the success and failure of VR? Which we could also talk about just the success and failure of VR in general. But what role do you think games media will play in it, Kirk?
Whew, it's tough. I've, you know, as someone who's got an Oculus Rift and has written about VR online, I think the same role that tech media plays in anything, in that you use the thing and are hopefully a good enough writer to convey your experience and inform people about it and tell them what the deal is and why it's interesting. So to just that basic level. But the question of how games media will cover VR is a really interesting one that I don't have a great conception of. Because you know what I mean? Like, how the hell...
Right, how do you review how do you get into a VR game and like...
Well, and show it. The only answer is everybody needs to have VR goggles that they can wear to watch your coverage of the game. Like, you know, streaming video is the biggest thing for video game coverage online. Streaming video and animated, you know, GIFs and streamable and whatever else, because the ability to demonstrate what's happening in the game at the same time alongside the written word, or even in the case of like a YouTube video in place of a written word, is huge because it's so much closer to the actual experience of the game. So that same innovation for VR would mean everybody is, you know, wearing their, you know, fifth gen Google glasses that just convert into VR goggles and can just say, okay, boop, I want to see this game, and it just pops up on their glasses or whatever, and then they can have the experience, because otherwise you can't get there. If it's not that, you can't do it. There are shortcuts, like where you show the game the view that I have, like if I'm wearing a headset and then you show my head like in the corner while I'm looking around like a moron, but that doesn't really convey what it's like to use VR. I mean, you've used VR, like you've worn those things. You can't get a sense of that without actually doing it. I just don't think it's possible.
Well, so I'm trying to think of like an answer to Gabriella's question about what role the media will play. And I'm wondering, like, do you think that the success of like PlayStation VR and like Oculus Rift, et cetera, will depend on whether the media says, hey, this is like revolutionary, buy it, or whether people are more tepid on it?
I think it'll depend on, I mean, just like anything, yeah, to an extent, I think that, you know, the media will play an important role because they'll check it out and be able to talk about it, especially with new technology, because people don't want to just go buy something sight unseen. Those headsets are probably going to be expensive. But really, honestly, I think that it's going to be word of mouth with that stuff. Like, if they can set up, if PlayStation VR, which I'm extremely skeptical about, and maybe we can talk about that on another podcast, but if PlayStation VR is going to be amazing, if they just set that thing up at every Best Buy in the country, at every Target, and you can just go use it, and it does the thing that the Wii did, where the first time you use it, you think, oh, holy shit, this 100% immediately makes sense to me. This just works. This is awesome. I want it. Like, if that's what it's going to be. And I'm sure, you know, the media will play its part in saying the same thing. Oh, it's really cool. Go try it. But people will have to try it for themselves, because that's really the thing. Like, you have to do this for yourself. And then once you do that, you tell your friends, oh my gosh, like, I got this thing. You got to come over and check it out. Or we got to go to Best Buy and like do this. You're not going to believe it. It's so cool. And it's going to be that kind of a thing, really, that'll lead to it succeeding or failing, I'd say.
I mean, how could you not trust in PlayStation VR after the success of PlayStation Move and Wonderbook and TVs that they were selling?
The short version of my take
Vita.
On that is that it's locking a virtual reality is still too underdeveloped to lock it to any kind of a like set hardware like the PS4. I don't think the PS4 is powerful enough for starters. Like, they can do cool things, but this technology is not quite ready for prime time yet, which isn't to say it isn't amazing, but like, it's going to be on PC. Like, it still needs to be on PC for quite a while to fully realize what it's going to be about. And by the time that happens, the PS4 is going to be ancient hardware wise. And I just, this will be at best a cool dalliance that people can get to play like cool, weird games on. But it's not going to be the transformative VR thing that I think feels possible, at least, if not likely, but maybe possible, when you use an Oculus, because that's going to happen on PC. That's still going to be on PCs, at least for the foreseeable future. That's my take anyway, my hot tech take.
Your hot take? Yeah, man, it's going to be expensive and it's going to be cool, but it's also going to it's going to shut people away from the world. And like, who wants to be sitting there? And like it's bad enough. Like, I get enough trouble with my girlfriend for sitting there and putting on headphones and talking in Destiny. Like, I can't even imagine shutting myself out by putting on a VR headset. Like, I don't know. I trying to be optimistic and like keep an open mind, but I just cannot imagine ever sitting there and like sit for an extended period of time playing a video game with a giant headset on.
That's the question, and I think that's always the kind of thing with a new type of technology where you don't know what the answer looks like until someone shows it to you, and then you say, oh, this is the answer. Like, yeah, the huge headset isn't the end game of VR, right? It's how we've always pictured it, but maybe it's something much less intrusive. HoloLens is that kind of an idea. Like, maybe it's comfortable to wear and easy, and it just allows you even to still be present in the room that you're in while looking at, you know, the game that you're playing. Like, the technology is not there yet. Even though the conception of it, like the concept when you use VR is there. You think, oh, okay, like if I was in a game with zero latency moving my head around and exploring a space, that's fucking incredible, and that's like nothing I've ever done before. That feels like, okay, we're going to do this one way or another. The question is, what's it going to be? And it's not going to be until, you know, we'll know it when we see it. We're not probably going to be the guys to come up with the idea, but I feel you on the headset thing. Like, that's
so wait. So do you think, do you think these companies are like blowing their wads too early?
I think Sony is. Yes. I think that PlayStation VR is
why
too
Sony
early.
And not Oculus.
Because Oculus is still, I mean, I don't know quite, I don't have a full notion of the consumer version, but I don't even think
they're doing the same sort of thing where they launch
PC. And so as a result, it's like just much more open and much more open to developers coming up and hacking it and coming up with new ideas. Even that is like, it's more of a niche thing. Sony marketing it as a console peripheral consumer device strikes me as premature. It doesn't mean, like, I admire how Sony does that stuff, I guess, as long as they don't go out of business. Like, they can keep trying to do this stuff. I don't mind. It just doesn't, seeing it on PC, it just, the whole thing feels more open to me. It feels more open to developers. It feels more open to people coming up with interesting things to do with it. But even that is just a step, where the problem, like I was saying before, the problem with it on PS4 is that it's going to be locked to that hardware. Like, you know, and that hardware is not powerful enough. Like with the Oculus, I can go buy a hella graphics card and like an amazing, super powerful PC that can do some amazing shit at really high resolutions and really high refresh rates. The PS4 can't do that. Like, that thing is stuck and it's never going to get any faster. And so to me, tying your VR headset to that kind of hardware is crippling yourself, where the Oculus doesn't have that problem.
Okay, let's do a couple more questions. I got a few more on Twitter that we can kind of run through real quick. We're going a little long today because we have to make it up.
We didn't have one last week.
We have to make it up to people.
We're making it up to you guys. Yep. Thanks for sticking with us.
This is our special Thanksgiving, post-Thanksgiving hangover episode.
Right, this is our meat hangover episode.
Someone asked, a couple people have asked about Final Fantasy 15, which there isn't much to talk about there other than, I guess, the developer said on a forum that they have a playable version start to finish, and right now they're just working on polishing and finishing things up, which is like, okay, woo, congrats, mazel tov, you did it.
So the next big news be it's gone gold?
Yeah, right. That's the thing, right? Yeah. 15, I don't know. I don't really want to think about that game until... So Square is doing a thing in March where they're going to announce the release date. So they're going to have an announcement of the announcement party. Mm-hmm. And I presume that it'll be like in March they say, hey, we're releasing this in, I don't know, September, something like that. And then we'll think more about Final Fantasy 15. I'm excited to review that game. I'm excited to sit down and spend time with it, but
yeah,
I don't know.
Looking forward to playing it. Wow. I haven't even played the demo. I'm actually kind of fine to just not play it till it comes out. So yeah, unfortunately, I don't have many thoughts about it.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Yeah, it's not, you don't really need to play it. I think it's more for like people who are been waiting for this game forever, but no, there's nothing in the demo that it's cool. I mean, you saw the video,
that felt like enough to me to watch that ridiculous super move and then be like, all right, that looks cool, I'll play it when it comes out.
Yeah. Someone else on Twitter is asking about Danganronpa 3. They just announced like an anime and a couple new details of it. It seems like this is going to conclude the story in some way, Danganronpa 3.
Man, can you imagine? Okay, my thought on that is, first I'll have to go read like a wiki recap of Danganronpa 2 because I've totally lost all the mess up crazy shit that happened in that game. But can you imagine they're going to have a third one that actually is going to pull all of that together? It's going to be like the Matrix Revolutions. It's going to be the most like twisted, convoluted ass story. I mean, I'm psyched.
Hold on. But the second one is, let's spoiler warning for Danganronpa 2. So if you haven't played that, skip ahead. It was all VR, right? They were all in this virtual reality island.
Well, yeah, but it brought together all of the original cast at the end and had like your protagonist, right, and the main protagonist. I mean, I really don't fully remember what happened because it was so out there, but it was really abstract. It wasn't neatly tied up at the end like, oh, okay, and none of that really even happened, it was all virtual. Like, it seemed like
no it was
made it even more complicated.
It ended with you with everybody in these like pods and that was the reality, and Makoto Naegi and his crew of the Future Foundation came in to rescue you guys from the virus, the Jungpo virus, and yeah, I don't know. We'll do a Danganronpa, an all Danganronpa episode.
I'm mainly laughing because like what worked about Danganronpa 2 was that 90% of the game you didn't need to know anything from Danganronpa 1, which was actually good because Danganronpa 2 was fine on its own. And then but then the end was this hilarious clusterfuck of like lore explosion, and I'm just picturing Danganronpa 3, like what can they do that would be, I think it was like a clever approach in Danganronpa 2, right? To divorce it from everything that happened in the first game and then cleverly kind of tie it back together. As much as it was kind of a mess, it was a fun mess, just like the rest of Danganronpa. But what can they even do in Danganronpa 3? And I haven't looked, maybe they've already said, but I haven't looked at the, I don't want to watch trailers for it. I just want to play it when it comes out. But
They still need to resolve all the stuff that's like the whole world being destroyed and like the,
they have to resolve so much. But they have to also, I'm sure it'll be on format, right? It'll be a group of kids and they'll be killing each other and having trials, and you know, Monokuma will be there and Trombone Solos will play and it'll be that thing, which is, so I wonder just how they're gonna flip that out a third time and then resolve it. Yeah, I mean, I'm, other than my main thought on Danganronpa 3 is I'm excited as hell for it and we'll play it the minute it comes out. So
yeah, man, there's a lot of 2016 is gonna be a crazy year.
It's gonna be
that
good.
And Persona Final Fantasy 15 and new Deus Ex, and I don't know.
Yeah,
I was just
thinking about the new Deus Ex. Well, Uncharted is coming out, and that's exciting. You know what I'm excited for is there's going to be the big Witcher DLC pack is going to come out pretty soon. That's going to be awesome. Like, I honestly, like,
you're most excited about?
I'm pretty damn excited for it. I'm serious. Like, the last Witcher DLC was so good. It was some of the best DLC I've ever played for a game, just because it was so fun and smart and good and cool. The fact that they're making even more just does make me very excited. So that is one of the things I'm really looking forward to next year. But maybe that can be the subject of an upcoming podcast. What we're excited for 2016.
Oh, you want to do that one?
Well, yeah, okay. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe not.
Maybe we should do our own game awards.
Oh, that's not a bad idea. Awards. What do we give, like, most anticipated? Is that a category at the Game Awards?
Check, do you still have the Game Awards?
Yeah, I'm gonna check. That's the worst category. That's probably my least favorite category. Most anticipated.
Can we go through some more of those categories and make fun of them?
Best. Well, we've gone so over. We're out of time. We can do that. Or I guess, no. Yeah, most anticipated game. All right, we're going to end on this. Most anticipated game. Let's see what it is. Okay. Oh, God.
Wait, all can right. I guess?
Yeah, sure.
How many are there?
1, 2, 3, 4. There's 5.
Okay, Final Fantasy 15.
No.
No.
What? So you're gonna laugh at the ones that are included over that game too.
Uncharted 4.
Yes, that's one.
What else is coming out next year?
What's one of
the No Man's Sky?
Yep, that's two. That was gonna be a hint on that one.
Okay. Is it any of the ones I just mentioned?
I'll give you a clue for the next three. Two of them are PS4 exclusives, and one of them is an Xbox One exclusive. Or at least an Xbox exclusive.
Xbox exclusive. Is that ReCore? Is that? No. What's an Xbox exclusive that's coming out next year? Halo Wars?
No. That would be awesome if Halo Wars was on. No, I think it's like it's kind of a weird game that like...
Crackdown?
No. That nobody really knew what the heck it was. It's from a developer who's made a really famous series in the past. It had a protagonist who I thought that his name was really amazing, but it's actually not as amazing. It's kind of a TV show and a game.
Quantum Break.
Yeah, that's on this list over Final Fantasy 15. I'm not really anticipating that game.
Other ones must be
two
Horizon.
PS4 exclusives. Yep, that's one. Horizon
and The Last
Zero
Guardian.
Dawn. Yep, you got it. And The Last Guardian.
So
those aren't
on.
The games I'm anticipating really.
Man, The Last Guardian is gonna suck. Mark my words, it's gonna suck.
I'm extremely worried. I hope it doesn't suck. But yeah, I hear you.
Wait, hold on. So, Final Fantasy. Here's a list of games that is not on the VGA's most.
Persona 5.
Persona 5. Final Fantasy 15. What else were we just talking about? Deus Ex.
Yeah, Deus Ex is
hold on. I'm going to pull up a list of video games. That Danganronpa. How is Danganronpa nowhere on this list?
Yeah, Horizon Zero Dawn looks cool, but I don't know why. I mean, that's not over some of those games we just listed. Not for me, but I mean, this is why. I mean, it's a stupid category, but
Zelda Wii U.
Yeah, what? that even seems like it should be on there.
Dark Souls 3.
Hmm.
Battleborn. How is Battleborn not in this list?
Or what about, what's the one? What's the epic one? What's that game called? Cortex or something? Codex? That they keep introducing?
Paragon.
How is Paragon not on here, man? That's like way more anticipated than any of the games we've said so far.
Fire Emblem Fates. Okay, this is nonsense that game is not on this list.
Yeah.
XCOM 2?
Honestly, I'm excited for a new Fire Emblem game. Is any of the other games that we said? I'd actually forgotten that, but
I already claimed it on our release sheet. Just so you
know. I'm excited. Oh, you claimed it? Oh, that's fine. I'll just play it.
Yeah,
I don't need to review it.
Bravely Second. How is that not on the list?
I don't know. After the end of Bravely Default, I'm like less psyched about that. Way more psyched about Fire Emblem. But
Hold on. There's no way that they're going to do that same nonsense that they did for Bravely Default.
It'll be good.
The Deus Ex game, and then a lot of like other smaller stuff. Dishonored 2. How is Dishonored 2 not on that list?
Weird list. Wait, a lot of exclusives. Maybe it's like tied up in that. I don't know. People voted for that. Why is Quantum Break on that? Who's excited about Quantum Break? Not to shit on that game or anything, but like, I don't know anything about it. It looks stupid. It looks weird. I'm not interested yet. definitely not most anticipated game of 2016 interested or anywhere close. So, whatever.
Yeah. Overwatch, maybe? Although I guess that's kind of out.
Kind of feels almost like it's out. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm psyched for it to keep being out and to get better, but yeah.
Gears of War 4. Well, I guess, yeah, whatever. Doom.
Doom, not as excited. Gears, I'm excited. I'm always psyched for a new Gears game, but Doom doesn't look awesome. We'll see.
Yeah, so I mean, Mass Effect Andromeda. How is that?
Is that really? That's not going to actually come out next year. No fucking way.
Well,
they're
going to
announce it or something and then delay it like that.
Yeah. Well, so yeah, I mean, at E3 they'll probably do a big blowout at E3 next year and then delay it and
delay it to February or March or something of 2017.
Yeah,
like that.
Sure.
I can't imagine them being like, it's coming this fall, and then it actually comes out in the fall. It just doesn't seem like that ever happens anymore.
Yeah. Square Enix has a bunch of cool JRPG stuff coming out next year, like this game Project Setsuna that looks really interesting, and Star Ocean 5. Some Dragon Quest games are coming to 3DS, some ports of older Dragon Quest games. But anyway, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a packed year.
Yeah, it'll be good. It's weird how, like, it's weird how 2015, I mean, every year is packed, every year is exciting. It's weird how in some ways 2015 feels disappointing only because the fall games were disappointing, but 2015 was not disappointing. So, yeah, I mean, there were so many good games. There's so many good games every year. Every year I say the same thing. Well, wow, there were like a billion cool games. So sounds like that'll be good. Kind of an impossible award to give, I guess, but we'll see. We're going to cover that. So that's tonight? The Game Awards are tonight. I guess I should know that. I do know that. We're covering it. That'll
be
fun.
This is coming out on Friday. So
Thursday right now. So, yeah. People have already seen. We didn't really make any predictions. Oh, we predicted The Witcher 3, Game of the Year. That's our prediction. Our one.
There'll be some news announcements, too. Like, Keeley's always good about getting the exclusives and the trailers and the announcements.
Yeah.
And then also, Saturday is PlayStation Experience, so there'll be some cool news there, I think.
Destiny news. Yeah, some Destiny news. Hopefully something cool and not something disappointing. They're like, we're bringing back Gjallarhorn, and that's the whole thing. That's the only news.
Yeah, well, so I'm still very curious about how their plan is going to lay out over the next year until the fall, because it was interesting. There was like a minor little controversy. No, not a controversy. Well, so I had reported, remember, that there would be no paid DLC and that they're going to do microtransactions for cosmetic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then GameSpot... they quoted this kind of markety speak from Activision's most recent investors call from Eric Hirschberg at Activision saying, we're going to do DLC, we're going to do like microtransactions and expansions, right? Mm-hmm. And there was like a little bit of a hullabaloo where some people were like, oh, Jason, you were wrong because you said they're not doing the paid DLC this year. They're not doing the expansions like that. And I think there's a little bit of confusion over what an expansion actually means and what they're actually going to do. So here's my understanding real quick of what they're going to do.
Okay.
And some of this might have changed. This is just based on what I heard a couple months ago. So they're going to keep doing like the Halloween stuff where they have cosmetic DLC and like fun seasonal events and stuff like that. They're going to sell like skins and sparrows or whatever, like cosmetic stuff. They're not doing big expansions like they did last year. So there's not going to be like the $20 DLC drop. They're going to do content drops, but I had heard that they're going to be free, but that may have changed if they're not making enough money or they want to make more or whatever. So, like, I can imagine them doing a big January content drop, and maybe that'll be free, or maybe it'll be $5, $10 or whatever. But it's not going to be the size of, like, The Dark Below and House of Wolves. So my understanding is that the next expansion, and this word is kind of weird with Destiny because was the Taken King an expansion or was that a new game? Like, it kind of felt like a new game.
Right.
But my understanding is that the next expansion will be next fall, the big one, what they call internally Destiny 2, although I doubt they'll actually call it Destiny 2 because that would confuse the hell out of everyone.
Right.
But that, to my understanding, is going to be the next big paid thing. You pay $60 for it. Up until then, there could be microtransactions. There could be smaller things that they sell. My understanding back in the day, like a few months ago when I reported on this, was that they were going to give away a lot of the content. I guess we'll see this weekend what they announced.
Interested. I mean, I could definitely see them going the route of everyone sort of is predicting at least something where we're going to get a new version of Vault of Glass or the other or Crota's End, like a new updated old raid. That's the kind of thing I could see being free. If they do, I really hope that they release a new raid at some point this year, just because it would take something on that scale, I think, to bring me back. And I'm guessing I'm not alone in that like we've kind of totally waned on playing the game. And to get me back, it's going to take more than just some year one exotics and like a slight bump to the level cap or something. Like, it's going to take something really new for me to go play. And if they did release a whole new raid, I'd be pretty surprised if it was free. But I mean, I don't know. Yeah, like you said, I guess it could have changed.
I don't think they're going to release a raid. I mean, the stuff that they had been working on, I mean, I don't know. It's like you read the story that I published.
Yeah, I know.
So long. It's so hard for them to make stuff. I don't think they can really afford to be making stuff during the year when they have to worry about what they're releasing next fall.
Especially when, based on your story, was that everything they've released so far has been reused in some way or repurposed from that they'd already made it. Like, the Dreadnought was, like, originally conceptualized as part of the main game. So based on that, now everything they're making is probably entirely new. Like, so that's even harder. Like, that's even more work. So, yeah, that does make sense. Like, the idea of them releasing a new raid along with working on whatever is coming next fall. I mean, they've gotten really big.
Yeah.
They are a very, very big studio at this point, so they have a lot of capability, but it'll be interesting anyway.
Yeah, and I think they have a team that's just a live team, but I think the live team is working on stuff like what the Festival of the Lost was. And that was super cool. That was really awesome, the way they did that. And maybe they'll do more stuff like that. They do have some stuff that they banked away from previous stuff, like the Pyramidian, I think it's called, on Mars, like a Mars area with a raid there, and the European Dead Zone. So that stuff we'll see in the future. But it will be interesting, and I guess we'll see on Saturday what they announce for now.
What the next thing is.
Hopefully they talk about the future. It would be really nice. Maybe they haven't even made decisions about what they're going to do, but it'd be nice if they were more upfront about their plans.
Yeah, I think enough people are wondering that this sort of feels like a good time for them to come out and do that. And they've been so much more communicative this year and so much faster on stuff that hopefully that bears out in how they do this. I'd love for them to say not only you're getting this, but also maybe in the weekly in a blog post or something, just lay out more of a vision for the next 6 months, because everyone's wondering. I know I'm wondering, is there going to be any reason for me to come back to this game?
Yeah, I mean, maybe if the answer is no, then they don't want to reveal that.
Well, that's true. That is a good point.
We'll I mean, see. Yeah. I mean, I think the fact that they haven't talked so much about anything could change on Saturday when they announce stuff. But I don't think there's going to be a ton between now and next fall. Mm-hmm. That's just the sense that I got from reporting on all that. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. So I think that'll do it for this week's episode. Some quick housekeeping. If you like the podcast and if you got this far, you better like the podcast. Make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave a review. We need lots and lots of reviews. We laugh every time we read one and it calls us hipsters or biased. Those are my favorite. These guys are biased.
Biased.
I don't
hipsters.
Know what that means. What does that mean?
It means we're human beings. It means we're human beings.
Right.
Literally,
it means we have
that's
opinions.
The same as saying these guys seem like human beings. that's all it means.
Yeah. These guys seem like people. Leave us some reviews. If you would like to submit questions for the podcast, you can email us at splitscreen@kotaku.com. Kirk Hamilton, deputy editor. Congratulations again, man.
Thanks, man.
It's very exciting.
I'm psyched.
Running the shit out of Kotaku.
We're just running that thing. Running it hard.
So we may or we may not have outro music right now.
Yes.
We don't know
yet. If you're
yet.
Hearing it, I hope you like it. If not, you will hear it next week.
Okay. Well, cool. I'm looking forward to hearing it because I still haven't heard it either.
It's great. It's going to be great. You're going to love it.
All right. Thank you all for listening. Mm-hmm. Farewell.
Take care,
everybody. Goodbye.